This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
While children account for 30% of the world's population, girls and boys under the age of 18 account for 42% of all forcibly displaced people worldwide.
That was Kate Pond of the UN Refugee Agency on how children are disproportionately affected by forced displacement from their homes. Details coming up. Also, Ethiopia holds its elections on Monday, and unknown gunmen have abducted several female students in northwest Nigeria. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. On Monday, Ethiopia holds its twice-delayed national elections. The stakes are significant in a country enmeshed in a brutal conflict in its Tigray region and seeing a surge in regional and ethnic violence. For an overview of the election and its implications, VOA's Kate Pond Dawson spoke with Terence Lyons, a professor of peace and conflict studies at George Mason University near Washington. He has studied and written extensively about Ethiopia's legacy of conflict.
Ethiopia has been in a transitional process since 2018, and the prospects for democracy and stability seemed quite promising at the beginning. More recently, however, Ethiopia is seeing significant conflict, and not only in Tigray, the northernmost region, but also in parts of the Oromo region, parts of the Amhara and the Benishangul-Gumuz region. And so whether the election is able to usher in a period of greater stability, or is the election likely to further polarization, fragmentation, and divisions? I think that's what's at stake. I think who's going to win and so forth is clearer than will the post-electoral period provide the opportunities that Ethiopians need in order to build more a stable democratic society.
What are the expectations about whether this election can be free and fair and reasonably peaceful?
Well, I mean, on the question of peaceful, there's already a significant amount of violence. I'm not sure the election per se will spark a new round of electoral violence, in part because there is so much underlying violence. I'm afraid that in most of Ethiopia, the election will not be competitive. In Tigray, the election has been canceled because of the war. In the Oromo region, which is the largest, most populous region, most of the historical opposition parties are boycotting. Many of the constituencies or the ruling party is running unopposed. There is some competition in the Amhara region, and it'd be interesting to watch that. Politics in the south and in some of the regions like the Somali and the Afar region are often very, you know, local. It's a question of which local constituency will gain access to power and hence a greater resources. So I think the real regions to watch are the Amhara region, to see if some of the opposition parties are able to get significant seats. And then second of all, to look at questions like turnout, levels of registration, to get an idea of, is the prosperity party, the ruling party, a party that can mobilize at the grassroots, can get its people to the polls, can operate as a political institution connected at the grassroots.
Now, Ethiopia, of course, is a major player in regional developments. What are the implications for this election for Ethiopia's neighbors?
The way that I put it is that in Ethiopia, regional politics are also local politics. So what happens in Mogadishu in Somalia has implications for the Somali region of Ethiopia. The populations across the border between Ethiopia and South Sudan and Ethiopia and Sudan mean that there's often those links can often exacerbate or spark conflict. The biggest conflict right now is with Eritrea. Eritrea and Troops are deeply involved in the war in Tigray, and that is makes any prospects for peace in Tigray extremely difficult. It'll be difficult to get the Eritreans to withdraw. The Ethiopian government says they expect the Eritreans to withdraw, but that suggests that the Eritreans will decide when they wish to withdraw. More broadly, if Ethiopia were to move into a period of greater instability, that would then spread across the region. The instability in Ethiopia would inevitably shape political prospects in Somalia, in Eritrea, and all the other neighboring countries. And so the entire region, and therefore, frankly, the entire world, has a real stake in Ethiopia's stability and the prospects for a more democratic, less authoritarian Ethiopia.
That was Professor Terence Lyons at George Mason University near Washington, speaking with Kate Pound Dawson. Campaigning has ended ahead of Ethiopia's elections on Monday, but VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch, who is in the capital Addis Ababa, says preparations continue. She spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson a few hours ago.
In Addis Ababa, over the past few days, we have seen more political activity in the streets than I've personally ever seen in Ethiopia, and people on the streets said more than they've ever seen. Up until Wednesday night, the campaigns were going on, and there are dozens of political parties contesting, and a lot of them were having rallies or parades or driving cars around with music and slogans and balloons. And people in the streets, even those that were deeply against what the government at the moment, like people who are said that they support candidates that are in jail at the moment. There are candidates contesting from jail. We're kind of amazed about how much free expression they were seeing on the streets of Addis Ababa and how new that is. The other thing we're seeing on the streets is preparation for the elections. We met with some young people that work for the National Electoral Board, and they were going from neighborhood to neighborhood, 15 spots a day, to give tutorials on how to vote. And other than that, because between Wednesday night and the vote on Monday, there is a moratorium on campaigning, and the local media isn't covering election issues for this time. So it's pretty quiet at the moment.
Given the conflict in Tigray and a surge in ethnic violence over the past year in other parts of the country, are there concerns for violence around this election?
Yes, that certainly is a worry, and we expect heavy security on Monday. The conflict in Tigray originally centered around an election, so this is a particularly contentious issue. And one would have to imagine that the TPLF, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, would certainly want to disrupt this election, as the government within this conflict has more or less canceled their election. Anyway, this conflict's been going on for more than 7 months, and it is extremely tense and extremely violent. So some element of the Tigray conflict or other conflicts within Ethiopia could manifest into election violence. A lot of people are quite hopeful that the day will pass peacefully, and that high security and vigilance from voters will prevent anything bad from happening. But as one candidate told me, just be prepared for anything.
That was VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa, speaking with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson. Unknown gunmen have abducted several female students and teachers from a federal government college in Birnin Gwari in northwest Nigeria in the latest such mass kidnappings at schools. The Kebbi State Commissioner of Police, Adeleke Adeyinka, said the gunmen attacked at noon yesterday, killing a policeman and injuring one student. Three teachers and yet to be ascertained numbers of students are missing. Dr. Abubakar Sani is a public affairs analyst based in Maiduguri in northeastern Nigeria. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the abduction of students and teachers.
So when I heard about this very kidnap, I was devastated, because this is one kidnap too many. For how long will this thing continue? You understand? For how long? School children that are entitled to, you know, basic education, and they go there and they get kidnapped. This time around, not in a state government institution, but in a federal government institution. And we are keeping quiet as if it is nothing, as if it is one of those usual things that, you know, happens, and, you know, the media would blow it out of proportion for a week, 2 weeks, then it dies down. No, I think something is fundamentally wrong with the way we live our lives. There are some limits, even in the way criminals operate in other crimes. You know, there are certain things that they don't do. But things like, you know, the rights of children. I've been reading books and whatever about the mafia people. They will not do such thing. Children go to school, you go, you kidnap them, and then at the end you are demanding for ransom. And this time around, they don't demand for 10, 20 million naira. It's 200 million, 180, 300, upwards. You understand? It's one of the lucrative criminal enterprise now that everybody is going into. So to me, the government must sit up, because the basic responsibility, the first and primary responsibility of the government is the provision of security for lives and property of all Nigerians. And is there any property that a Nigerian can own like his child? You understand? You can't even compare the life of a child with a property. So this life of the child ought to be protected by the government. If, you know, on the highway, people will go there and they will risk, you know, being kidnapped in the schools, I don't think we should be talking about this. The government has failed, and it has failed woefully in this very sacred responsibility of protecting our lives and property, especially the lives of innocent school children. So this is very unfortunate, and the government needs to make a statement. Not just the government, the president. He must apologize to the parent and come up with a holistic approach of addressing this menace. I'm hoping that this will be the last kidnap that we will be seeing in any of our schools across the large terrain of this country.
The report released by the police said the government sees mostly girls, some school teachers. Do you think this trend may affect girl child education in the northern part of Nigeria?
I'm not happy with this kidnap, because it will discourage many from sending their children to school. I'm about to send my daughter to a Nigerian Army University. Honestly, I sat down, I talked about her safety, her security. Leaving wherever she is to reach that destination, could it be possible that they will go and still abduct her in that very school? I'm getting worried. You understand? I'm getting worried.
Do you also think that the series of abductions will affect school enrollment in the northern part of Nigeria?
So it will discourage so many parents from sending their children to schools, and it doesn't speak well for us. It will affect school enrollment. It will definitely affect school enrollment. Now you would only be seeing a school enrollment, a steady school enrollment and attendance in maybe state capitals. You understand? And then maybe the major towns. But I am sure any school that is located in a remote locality outside, you know, the major cosmopolitan cities, you might not be able to see children attending those schools, because the parent will discourage the children from attending it. So the government need to sit up and come up with a holistic plan of, you know, protecting the schools.
That was Dr. Abubakar Sani, a public affairs analyst, speaking from Maiduguri with reporter Mike Imbonye. After 10 years in exile, former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo is back in his home country. He was forced to leave Ivory Coast when he refused to concede defeat in a presidential election that later sparked months of violence that left more than 3,000 people dead. In 2011, he was extradited to the International Criminal Court at The Hague, where he awaited trial for 8 years on war crime charges. A judge acquitted him in 2019, saying prosecutors had failed to prove their case. Now, even though his former rival, President Alassane Ouattara, allowed Gbagbo to return to Ivorian soil, there are already concerns about what role the divisive former leader may play in national politics. The Associated Press reported that Gbagbo, wearing a blue shirt and white mask, told thousands of overjoyed supporters who met him in the Abidjan airport that he was happy to return to Ivory Coast and Africa. Despite COVID-19, the number of forcibly displaced people reached a record high 82.4 million. That's according to the UN High Commission of Refugees Global Trends 2020 report released today ahead of World Refugee Day on Sunday. Reporter Vicky Stark talked to NHCR's Kate Pond.
The UNHCR's report says the dynamics of poverty, food insecurity, climate change, conflict and displacement are increasingly interconnected and mutually reinforcing, driving more and more people to search for safety and security. Pond gives a breakdown of the 82.4 million, which is a 4% increase from 79.5 million in 2019.
It comprises a mixture of refugees, asylum seekers, and internally displaced people, as well as some stateless people. Now, the largest number, the largest proportion within there are people displaced within their own countries. That's 48 million, and they are the largest increase as well. In fact, two-thirds of the people who fled did not cross an international border.
She says some of the internal displacements may have been caused by efforts to contain the pandemic, as 160 countries closed their borders last year. 99 of those nations made no exception for people seeking protection.
Travel restrictions, border closures, and the suspension of asylum processes did lead to the biggest drop in new asylum claims since records began in 2000.
The UNHCR's report says in Africa, where over 6.5 million refugees have been recorded, Somalia and Yemen continued to be hotspots. In the Sahel region, nearly 750,000 people were newly displaced. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, atrocities carried out by armed groups led to UNHCR partners documenting the killings of more than 2,000 civilians. In Ethiopia, more than 1 million people were displaced within the country during the year, while more than 54,000 fled the Tigray region into eastern Sudan. In northern Mozambique, hundreds of thousands escaped deadly violence, with civilians witnessing massacres by armed groups in several villages, including beheadings and abductions of women and children.
Children are heavily and disproportionately affected by forced displacement around the world. To put it in context, while children account for 30% of the world's population, girls and boys under the age of 18 account for 42% of all forcibly displaced people worldwide.
With a theme this year of Together We Heal, Learn and Shine, UN officials are pressurizing states to seek solutions and share the responsibility for refugees and not just leave it on the shoulders of low and middle income countries, which host 86% of the world's refugee population.
We're calling on world leaders to act, to arrest and begin to reverse the trend of soaring displacement that we've seen over the last decade around the world. And we call on leaders to put their differences aside and to step up their efforts to foster peace and stability and a sense of cooperation.
With their reported figure translating to above 1% of the world's population, or 1 in 95 people being forcibly displaced, the UNHCR will be hosting heads of state in Geneva in December to discuss progress toward pledges already made. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
The U.S. is working with top African health officials to battle the growing coronavirus pandemic on the continent, in which many nations are seeing a third wave of infections. The U.S. says help is on the way, with hundreds of millions of vaccines headed for the developing world. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
5 million cases and 136,000 deaths. And yet, the pandemic is far from done with Africa, says the continent's top health official, Dr. John Nkengasong of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
The impact of this pandemic on the continent, the effect will be generational. in terms of the disruption that it has caused for our economies, our health systems, and schools and other sectors there. So it's extremely uncertain times we are living on the continent. Just a few weeks ago, we saw the trend, a downward trend, and then suddenly an aggressive upward trend, and we don't know how where the peak will be. But what we know for sure on the continent is that we've gone now through the three waves.
But he said help is on the way. In recent weeks, the Biden administration has announced a plan to share hundreds of millions of vaccines with lower-income countries, plus more than $500 million in assistance. Jeremy Kunundek is executive director of the COVID-19 Task Force for the U.S. Agency for International Development.
Last week, President Biden announced that the U.S. will be donating $500 million Pfizer vaccines through the COVAX initiative to the AU and to additional low and middle income countries that make up part of the COVAX advanced market commitment, the 92 countries in that group. This is the largest ever donation of vaccines by any country in history, and it further solidifies America's commitment to saving lives and to helping lead the world out of this pandemic.
And Kangasong stressed that the continent cannot get through its battle against the pandemic alone.
We believe that, as you rightly said, partnership is the solution. I mean, a strong partnership, a genuine partnership with and strong leadership, and especially that led by the United States government, is going to be the solution that will work us out, especially with the ability to access vaccines in a fairly timely and scalable manner on the continent.
Those vaccines could take some time to make landfall, Kunundek said. So in the meantime, he urged people in Africa and elsewhere, keep your distance, wash your hands, and be cautious. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Zambia is observing 21 days of national mourning with flags flying at half-staff and all entertainment banned as the country mourns Kenneth Kaunda, the country's founding president and champion of African nationalism. Officials announced his death yesterday, saying he died peacefully at a military hospital where he had been receiving treatment for pneumonia. According to the Associated Press, Kaunda ruled Zambia for 27 years, taking the helm after the country gained independence from Britain in 1964. During his leadership, Kaunda gave critical support to armed African nationalist groups in Angola, Mozambique, Namibia, and Zimbabwe. According to a Reuters report, Zambia under Kaunda was one of the countries most opposed to the South Africa's apartheid government, and for decades hosted the exiled African National Congress, ANC, on its soil. South Africa has declared 10 days of mourning for Kaunda, while Botswana has ordered 7 days of mourning. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the interview.